Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We're going to talk about somebody who you may well have never heard of, but it's almost guaranteed you are familiar with one of the things he invented. Shigeichi Negishi died of natural causes in January. He was 100 years old, and his death didn't really register in Japan, where he'd lived all his life, or internationally until recently, which is slightly strange because he is regarded as the first person to invent the karaoke machine. So why did the passing of Shigeichi go so relatively unnoticed, given the global popularity of karaoke? And another question, what is his legacy in Japan? Well, to help answer those questions, I'm joined from Tokyo by author and writer Matt Ault, who interviewed Shigeichi for his book Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. He also wrote his obituary, which was published in the Wall Street Journal. Matt, kia ora, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So take us back, if you could, and tell us the story of the karaoke machine and how Shigeichi Negishi came to be the inventor of this.
Well, it all started in 1967. Mr. Negishi was working at a company that he ran that assembled electronics products for other bigger Japanese companies. And one of his coworkers said to him, he heard him whistling and singing when he came into work one day and said, "You're not a very good singer, are you, Mr. Negishi?" Just jokingly. And from that joke, it was born. Negishi-san said, "You know what? If only he could hear me singing with a backing track, then I could show him. I could show him what a singer I am." And that's really where it began. And he directed a engineer to assemble parts that they had laying around, an 8-track tape deck, a mixing circuit, a microphone, things like this, into what became the first karaoke machine.
And it wasn't originally called the karaoke machine. In fact, he wanted to stay away from describing it as a karaoke machine, yeah?
Mr. Negishi called his device the Sparko Box, and there were several reasons for this, one of which was because it featured these flashing disco lights on the front that would strobe in time with the music. But the bigger reason was that he and his partner in particular felt that the word karaoke sounded a little too close to the Japanese word kanoke, which means coffin. A very inauspicious sort of word to start off your company with, your business with. So they talked about it and decided to call their machine the Sparko Box.
One thing that I found fascinating in your obituary for the Wall Street Journal is that at least five Japanese inventors independently came up with the idea for the karaoke machine in like a 4 or 5 year period. I am fascinated by that. Why is that? Why is there this desire to sit down and watch other people sing badly? Is it a cultural thing in Japan?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Five people did independently invent the karaoke machine in Japan between the years of 1967 and 1971, when it finally really took off. The reason why karaoke was invented in Japan, when Japan by no means invented the sing-along, is very simple. It's because of the salaryman. A salaryman is a Japanese portmanteau of the word for a salaried employee. It basically means a white-collar office worker. And in Japan of the era, and we're talking in the 50s and the 60s, it was pretty much obligatory that you would have to go out drinking after hours, after your company closed for the day, with either your coworkers or with a client. And there was a whole nightlife ecosystem that arose to kind of service the needs of salarymen. And music played a big part in that. Mm. There were cabarets where you had professional singers. There were smaller places where you might pay a wandering musician to play a backing song and you would sing along to it. But singing and music always played a big part in this. Mr. Negishi's Sparko Box automated this process. It basically cut the musician out of the equation by making this device that you could drop a 100 yen coin into and have a song play for you automatically.
Let's talk a bit about Negi Shisan, the man, because it seems he was a terrifically interesting person. Entrepreneurship was in the blood, it seems.
Mr. Negishi led a very interesting life. He was born just a few months after the great Kanto earthquake leveled the entire city of Tokyo in 1923. He was a very crafty. He had a great penmanship, and he liked to build things as a child. He was conscripted into the military out of college, and then when Japan lost World War II, he found himself spending 2 years in a prisoner of war camp in Singapore. And then afterwards, he launched on this trajectory, first as a salesman and then as an entrepreneur, that really took him to great heights, not only as a business person, but an inventor. When I first met Mr. Negishi, he was still a very spry 95 years old. This was back in 2018. And I was struck by just how he felt 2 decades younger than his actual calendar age. Mm-hmm. Aside from a spot of a little hard of hearing, he was remarkably together and with it. He was funny. He was witty. He would tell jokes. And he literally did not feel like somebody who was pushing 100 years old. That's why it was such a shock to learn from his family that he passed away in January. It really seemed like he would always be with us.
You mentioned earlier that the karaoke machine took the place of musicians who would accompany, you know, people as they sang in bars after work and so on and so forth. That is really fascinating. Can you explain how that kind of worked? So what, there would be sort of guitarists who would be hired by bars to accompany people singing, and all of a sudden along comes this machine and puts them out of work?
That's exactly right. In the 1950s through about the 1970s, there was a category of musician called the nagashi. Nagashi would wander from bar to bar, usually with a guitar, but sometimes they would have other accompaniment, usually one person, but it could be several. And for the cost of about 1,000 yen, they would play 3 songs, and salarymen would pay the money and have their accompaniment so that they could regale their coworkers with their, you know, favorite, whether it be a military march or whether it be a pop song, what have you. The Sparko box automated this process. It cut the musicians out of the picture, and that absolutely infuriated them. It caused him no end of trouble when he was first going around Japan, selling his device to various places, hotels, bars, and almost always he would make a quick sale because the people who ran these establishments saw that it would be popular. Mm. But then just as quickly, a day later, maybe two, he'd get a phone call and they'd be sheepishly asking him to take it back. The reason why was because the nagashi were angry and telling the bar owners or hotel keepers, innkeepers, that they would not come back if they ever saw this machine there. And those people played a vital role in making a place popular back in the day. So it was very much an early case of automation of creative act. And it caused all sorts of problems in society that we're actually seeing in different ways today.
Do you see dark? Yes, exactly. That we're seeing today, because I was wondering, do you see dark parallels as a person who works in the media between those tensions and some of the tensions that you and I face in our lines of work and many other people besides?
Well, right now the debate is over artificial intelligence, isn't it? How AI is automating away creative fields such as drawing or animating or painting or writing. And these were things that people felt machines could never do. But then AI came along, and it's arguable as to the, you know, debatable as to the quality of these things, but it's showing that machines can do them. And that's making a lot of creative people very angry. It really echoes the kind of fury that you saw from musicians in the 1960s and 1970s directed at the karaoke machine. People who had worked very hard their whole lives, trained, practiced, built up a business model for themselves, were suddenly seeing it undermined by this machine. And even though we think of karaoke right now as a kind of harmless diversion, back in time when it first appeared, it was absolutely seen as a threat by musicians.
I imagine, too, it would have led to developments in the realm of licensing and royalties for musicians in particular, because karaoke is much less clean than radio when it comes to tracking who has played what songs when and so on.
Absolutely. So in the very, very early years of karaoke, there were no royalties being paid to the artists who had recorded the backing tracks. Mm. As the years went by and the debate continued, licensing organizations and entities were set up so that people who were involved with karaoke could be at least paid for their work on recording the songs. And then later, as technology improved, streaming services arose that allowed the songs to be tracked in real time. Mm. In 1993, a streaming karaoke service debuted in Tokyo, and it is, I believe, the first streaming music service of any kind. And that allowed record labels to see exactly who was singing what, when, and where, and added this new dimension to music that had never been there before.
It's so fascinating. That's so fascinating. I would love to have access to that data. I wonder what the
number one... No, I know. Karaoke is actually, it's like a driving force for a lot of Japanese technological development, from like storage media. It went from 8-track tape to cassettes to laser discs to CDs and then streaming over digital lines and all sorts of devices that we don't actually associate with karaoke today, like the Nintendo Entertainment System or the PlayStation. They were originally sold not only as game systems, but karaoke machines in Japan, just to show you how popular of a pastime it was.
Is it still that popular, or has there been a decline in the popularity of karaoke?
Well, karaoke itself, I think, is always going to be with us, and it has evolved now into apps, which I think is a very popular way that people sing it, by streaming karaoke onto their smartphones. Mm-hmm. But the era of the dedicated karaoke facility, for lack of a better word, as they call them, a karaoke box in Japan, or mm-hmm. karaoke room, those have been on the decline since the turn of the 21st century, and they took another big hit with the pandemic, because obviously singing spreads a lot of, it can potentially, you know, spread a lot of particles and droplets and things like that. And we were avoiding that during those years, and people haven't really come back.
You met Mr. Nagishi to write, you know, as a part of your book. But I think I'm right in saying that you broke the story even internationally, that even Japanese media didn't get there ahead of you. His family reached out to you directly with this news. Did you get quite close to him?
I first met Mr. Nagishi when I was reporting for my book, Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World, which came out in 2020. And we stayed in touch after that. I mean, he was a very warm, very genial individual. Whenever I had questions about karaoke or about him, we'd stay in touch. And actually, most recently, we got together in November. It was the first time I'd seen him in 5 years.
Wow.
And so we did keep in touch. And when his daughter, with whom he lived, told me that he had passed away, it was just an incredible shock. And he was not really on the radar in Japan as the inventor of karaoke. Mm. He kept a very low profile in the years after he got out of the industry in the mid-70s. And he was a very successful businessman in other fields. But his contributions to karaoke were really only known inside the karaoke industry itself by real insiders. So yes, when I was the first one the family contacted, and when I asked them permission to write the obituary and they agreed, I knew it was going to be a big story. I didn't realize how big. Mm. I've been besieged by requests from the mass media because it seems I did break this.
It's fascinating. And the point that you make about how he was a successful businessman outside of karaoke, that's a very interesting point too, isn't it? In that he did not patent the design for this. Nobody really did.
No, because it was so expensive to patent things in Japan of the era. It was the kind of thing you could only do if you were a big corporation, really. Mm. And it took a long time. Back then, it was believed that fads really only lasted 3 years, and everybody thought karaoke was a fad. And since it would take 3 years to get a patent, the thinking was get while the getting's good and then just move on to something else. That was just the conventional wisdom back then. Who knew?
Sliding doors. Oh, Matt, it's been Matt, it's been lovely chatting to you. My final question for you this evening, of course, is what's your go-to karaoke song then?
No question. It's Rick James' Super Freak. I hope you have it and you can spin it for your listeners as you end this segment.
Oh, Matt, it's been really delightful chatting to you this evening. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me on.
Arrington National. Super Freak.
By Rick James, ending their interview with Matt Ault. And Matt's book is called Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode. And even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.